A lot about the history of the Tanaim. That was 2 weeks ago, and more specifically, last week we zeroed in on the life and the legacy of Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi. And as we said, Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi edited the Mishnayos, which really are the foundation and the bedrock of all of Torah Shebaal Peh as we know it. Now the Rambam points out, we'll just finish off the edges here and then we'll continue on to the next part. The Rambam wonders, why was it necessary for Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi to write the Mishnayos? It seems that everything was going fine. Torah Shebaal Peh means it's a Torah that is orally transmitted from one generation to the next. So why was it necessary for Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi to then change the standard procedure, to change the status quo, and to write it all down? And the Rambam says the reason why is because Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi had the tremendous foresight, and he understood that life is going to become difficult for the Jews once again, and they're going to be faced with adversity, and they're going to have all kinds of predicaments and all kinds of challenges, and they're going to go into galus. And he said, nobody's going to possibly remember everything that they have to know. How could they remember it? If there are going to be Jews scattered all about the world, if we don't have books that are able to unite the Jewish tradition, that are able to be the same standard from one community to the next, the Torah will be forgotten from the Jewish people. And therefore, the Rambam says that was the amazing providence that Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi had. It was the tremendous foresight that he had in structuring, in compiling all of the Torah Shebaal Peh, which really began with the Mishnayos. Now, it's important for us to talk about the following. The Gemara says in Masechah Shabbos that Shammai and Hillel both had different kinds of attitudes. So the Gemara says that Shammai really didn't have patience for people. That's what it seems the Gemara said. Obviously, he had patience for people who were really interested in learning from him. But the Gemara says that there were people who used to come and nag him, and they would specifically try to get on his nerves, and Shammai really had no time of day for them, and he just used to push them away. Hillel, on the other hand, was so much to the other extreme. He was so patient and so understanding, and the Gemara says that the same people who came to nag Shammai then just went down the block, and they realized that Hillel is a much better option, and whatever they want to talk about, he would just sit and listen. So the Gemara there tells a story about a Nachri Echad Shebalifnei Shammai. The Gemara says there was a Gentile who came to Shammai, and he engages him in conversation, and he asks, I'd like to know, Kama Torahs Yesh Lachem? How many Torahs are there? And Shammai looks back at him and he says, what's your question? What do you want from me? There's two Torahs. There's a Torah Shebichsav and a Torah Shebaal Peh. So that's the story that the Gemara says. And then the story gets a little more interesting, and then this non-Jew, this Gentile, goes to Hillel. He has a longer conversation with him, but I think people sometimes mistakenly think that Torah Shebichsav and Torah Shebaal Peh, that the written Torah and then the oral Torah, are considered two totally different systems, two totally different entities. And the truth is that there is nothing that can be further from the truth than that itself. How do we know that? The Rambam in Hilchos Tshuva, which is, Hilchos Tshuva is just a good thing to be learning at this time of year, regardless of our shir. But the Rambam in Hilchos Tshuva writes something fascinating. And the Rambam here gets into a discussion. I know the source sheet has a lot of wording on here. I don't know if we're going to go through everything, but I really put it on here because these Rambams are so fundamental. Everything I put on here are, I guess, I never like saying in a shir, there's a famous this or a famous that, a famous gemara, because it's not true. It's famous for some people. It's famous for the people who know it. It's not famous for the people who don't know it. So it always makes me feel bad when somebody speaks and they say, you know, there's a famous line in the Gemara that says this. I'm like, really? It's that famous? I'm that ignorant? So it's so that is true. In general, I don't like to say it's famous. These Rambams that I put on here are very fundamental. Of many of the Rambams that we find in his extensive writing, these are ones that have become more popular than others, and these are extremely important Rambams and very fundamental to a lot of what Judaism stands for. So the Rambam here writes in Hilchos Tshuva. If you look here at number Aleph, Elu hein she'ein lahem chelek la'olam haba. We know there's a Mishnah that says, Kol Yisrael yesh lahem chelek la'olam haba. That's really a Mishnah in Masechah Sanhedrin. The last parak in Sanhedrin, the Mishnah says, every Jew has a portion in the world to come. That's so reassuring. That's amazing. So I can live my life, I can do my thing, I can make all kinds of mistakes, but don't worry, I'm going to have a portion in Olam Haba. Is it going to be as great as the portion of Moshe Rabbeinu? No, of course it won't be. I'm not Moshe Rabbeinu. But at least I know I'm going to have Olam Haba, correct? So that's what the Mishnah says. What we don't know is that the end of the Mishnah finishes off the sentence. And the end of the Mishnah is, Kol Yisrael yesh lahem chelek l'Olam Haba. Every Jew has a portion in the world to come. Ve'elu she'ein lahem chelek l'Olam Haba. And here is the list of people who unfortunately will not have a place in the world to come. So we don't like to focus on that part of the Mishnah, so we just ignore it. But here the Rambam says we got to face the reality. Let's see, who are the individuals who are not worthy of a place in Olam Haba? So let's read what he says together. Ela nechrasim v'avudim v'nidonim al godol risha mechatasam la'ad ula'olmei olamim. Rambam says there are a group of people, this is quoting from the Gemara, there are a group of people who will not have a place in Olam Haba, and who will suffer, and who will be rejected and renounced forever and ever, for all eternity. Nothing's going to change. Because of the way they live their lives, there is no way to change it once their lives are over. So who are these people? The Rambam says, number one, Haminim v'hapikursim. You have the heretics. So that community that are heretical, those individuals are out. Now let's not make a mistake. The Chazon Ish already says we have many people who grew up today, let's say in Eretz Yisrael, and they don't know any better. Right? So unfortunately they're Jews who have not been given a Torah education. So you can't hold them responsible for being non-believers, for being atheists. How are they supposed to know any differently? You can't hold them responsible for being a heretic if you never knew otherwise. This is talking about a person who grew up and was educated and understands and knows right from wrong, and yet decides to reject it and to become a min or an apikoros. So there the Rambam says that person, ein lahem chelek l'olam haba. Number two, the Rambam says, the second category is hakofrim batorah, those who discredit, those who renounce the Torah. And we're going to see in a few minutes what that means. Number three, he says, hakofrim b'tchiyas ha-mesim u'b'biyas ha-goel. This should sound familiar because we say the Ani Mamins, and in the Ani Mamins, one of the most fundamental principles of our faith is that we believe Ani Mamin be'emunah shleima b'biyas ha-mashiach. Why don't you say, Ani Mamin, I believe that we have to keep Shabbos every week? No? So, Shabbos is a mitzvah. Shabbos is not a belief. Shabbos is a mitzvah that we are commanded to observe. The coming of Mashiach is considered to be a fundamental belief of the Jewish people. The fact that there's going to be a Tchiyas HaMesim is something that we need to believe in. It's part of the fundamentals of our Emunah. And that's what the Rambam says. It's so critical for us to think about that, that somebody who rejects that belief in Tchiyas HaMesim or in Bias HaMashiach is not entitled to a Chelek L'Olam Haba. This is why people who leave over in their will that they want to be cremated are considered to be severely renouncing the belief in Tchiyas HaMesim. It says that somebody who leaves over instructions to be cremated is not allowed to be buried in a Jewish cemetery. Those ashes cannot be buried in a Jewish cemetery. Now again, we have many people today who don't understand, who just say it's cheaper to be cremated than it is to have a regular funeral as we're conventionally familiar with. So that's not who we're talking about. We're talking about somebody who makes a choice to be cremated. And in such a case, the Achronim say the reason why we take that as such a severe hit against the Jewish religion is because that person clearly does not believe that their body will come back in Tchiyas HaMesim. It means you don't believe in that power of Tchiyas HaMesim. And that is one of the most fundamental, like the Rambam says. Somebody who's not a Shomer Shabbos still has a Chelek in Olam Haba. Somebody who eats on Yom Kippur still has a Chelek in Olam Haba. Somebody who doesn't believe in the coming of Mashiach or in Tchiyas HaMesim loses their Chelek in Olam Haba. Okay. Hamardim v'hamachtiei harabim, those who make other people sin, v'haparshim midarkei hatzibur, v'ha'ose averos biyad rama b'frahesia ki yohoyakim. If somebody does an avera and flaunts the fact that they are doing averas, well, what does that do to other members of the community? I show them that the whole Torah is a joke. I show them that I don't take it seriously. Now that's going to water down their observance as well. V'hamosrim, and those who give over damaging information about others in the community when they know that the price that's going to be paid for giving over that information is a devastating price. Now, this is a whole shiur unto itself. What is the definition of a moser? Right? So today, when there's an investigation about a sexual allegation against somebody, and they're asking for people to come forward and give information that is relevant to the case. Now, it doesn't mean we dig up every story that ever happened that has nothing to do with this. We're not trying to dig up every nasty thing the person ever did. It's not relevant. What's relevant is, do you have any information about this case that we need information about? Is that called Mesira? Is that called Mesira? Am I not allowed to cooperate with the authorities to give over information about another Jew, the answer is you have to cooperate and you have to give over the information. That is not called Mesira. Mesira is, in the days of Chazal, when somebody would go and give over negative information about another Jew that potentially was not true, or potentially we know that the punishment is not going to fit the crime. So in a situation like that, that would be Mesira. But we live, for all intents and purposes, we believe that we live in a just society here in the United States. Again, it doesn't always work out perfectly. But we believe in general that we have a legal system, and that legal system is something that we believe in. It's something that is the bedrock of so much of our society today here in America and democracy. And therefore, we would not consider that to be Mesira. We would say that that is considered to be going along with what needs to be done because we have a potentially public menace on our hands, and there is no Isser of Mesira when we're dealing with a public menace. That is just as an aside. Now, that whole, I totally oversimplified the issue of Mesira, and there's a lot more to talk about, but it's an important issue to get clear should it ever be relevant for anybody here. So then you go a little bit further, and the Rambam says, Matile Eima al Hatzibur Shelo L'Shem Shamayim. Who is another person who does not have a chelek l'olam haba? Somebody who terrorizes, somebody who intimidates the tzibur, meaning you have a leader, and that leader is not somebody who's trusted by the people. It's somebody who just sits and threatens the people, somebody who intimidates, not somebody who advocates for them. That is also, it's interesting that the Rambam throws that in this list. Everybody else, I understand. But why is somebody who's a leader, who's just a terrible leader, a dictator, I don't know, I guess that's a very dangerous reality to live with, and therefore he says that person has no chelek l'olam haba, v'shof chedamim, by the way, he says balei lashon hara, just to keep in mind, he puts that into this list here as well. Okay, and then the Rambam goes further. I put the three dots after balei lashon hara. So he has a whole long list, but that is included in it. Now that doesn't mean somebody who's ever spoken a word of lashon hara in their life. A baal lashon hara means somebody who is defined as being a baal lashon hara, somebody whose whole essence is that they're just a gossiper, somebody who goes around talking about other people and sharing negative information. Okay. Shlosha heina kofer matorah. So the Rambam then goes more carefully into what he said. And he explains to us, what does it mean that somebody who's kofer batorah does not have a chelek l'olam haba? Who is such an individual? Who is kofer batorah? Who is somebody who rejects the Torah? The Rambam says there are three definitions to that term. Number one, Ha'omer, somebody who says, She'ein Torah me'im Hashem, afilu pasuk echad, afilu teba achas. Im amar Moshe, amaro mipi atzma, hareza kofer batorah. If I say, I don't believe that God wrote every pasuk in Chumash. Moshe Rabbeinu along the way had certain predispositions, and he decided to add some things in. So there are certain parts of the Torah that don't make me comfortable. Certain parts of the Torah that stand against my predisposition, something that I'm not comfortable with. Look, there are many people today who say we should take out certain psukim in the Torah because it doesn't fit with our society. It just doesn't fit with the societal understandings and the norms that all of us are used to hearing on the news. So, you know what? It must be that Moshe Rabbeinu put that in. It's not that I don't believe in God. I just don't believe that the entirety of Torah was given by God. Maybe this pasuk snuck in somehow. Happens to be the Shalah Kaddish. I just said over Shabbos. I don't know if anybody was here, but I gave a shiur over Shabbos, and one of the things I mentioned was that I heard a shiur a couple of years ago from the Telner Rebbe in Yerushalayim, and he said that we have a belief that every pasuk in Chumash was uttered by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that means that we believe that every pasuk in Chumash is authentic, is real, and is just. So he says we have to believe in the authenticity of every pasuk, and that means the same way we have to believe Anochi Hashem Elokecha Asher Tzisicha Me'eretz Mitzrayim, that's fundamental, we have to believe in God, everybody knows that. He says you also need to believe with the same insistence that when God says Ani Hashem Hashochein Itam Bisoch Tumasam, when God says I am the one who still resides in the Jewish community even when they do something wrong, even when they are impure, Hashochein Itam Bisoch Tumasam, you have to believe that that also was written by God, and you have to believe with all your heart the same way Anochi Hashem Elokecha is true. The Shalah HaKadosh argues you have to believe HaShochein Itam B'soch Tumasam is also true. Yes, we live in a decadent and an immoral society. Yes, we make terrible mistakes. Yes, the Tanoim are so much greater than we are. And yes, all the major generations and great personalities before us may have been greater than us. That does not mean that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not here with us. He's here with us and He understands that we have struggles and he understands that we fail, and he understands that we're not always going to make him proud, but he's here with us. And you need to believe that as much as you believe any other pasuk or passage in Chumash that we are all familiar with. I found that to be a very powerful and reassuring comment of the Shalah HaKadosh. But anyway, that's what he says over here. The Rambam writes that, number one, the definition of a kofer b'Torah is somebody who rejects one of the psukim in Chumash because it just doesn't fit. Doesn't fit with the societal understandings of how people are supposed to think. Number two, the Rambam says, HaKofer b'Peirusha. Somebody who does not deny the pasuk in Chumash itself. This is somebody who denies the Peirush of the pasuk in Chumash. So that means, Chazal tell us that pre-Eitz Hadar, Chazal tell us that when you're supposed to take four species on Sukkis, it means you're supposed to take an Esrog. Now, how do we know? The Torah itself does not say that you're supposed to take an Esrog. So how do we know? Well, Chazal told us in their understanding that that's what it means. That was the reference. HaKofer b'Peirusha. If you say, I don't trust that that's what the pasuk meant, Chazal say that in the Gemara, but I don't believe it. I think they made it up. I've heard many people say this comment. Many people say, oh, it can't be, it doesn't make sense. Read the pasuk, it's not what it says. Yeah, it's true, but that's what Torah Shabbat Peh is. And the Rambam here says, if a person rejects a pasuk in Chumash, it's the same as a person who later on rejects the Peirush of a pasuk in Chumash, the way Chazal explained, the way Chazal interpreted what that pasuk is all about. And number three, he says, Ha'omer shahabore hechlef mitzvah zu b'mitzvah acherosu kvar batla ha-Torah zu. Somebody who goes through the Torah and says, you know, this mitzvah is no longer relevant, and therefore we're going to get rid of it and replace it with something else. Obviously, that is somebody who's kofar b'Torah. Now, it's very interesting. You look in the first pasuk in Chumash, Bereishis bara Elokim. Bereishis bara Elokim. Now, I don't know if the women in the room are Mavir Seder every week. It's a great idea. It's a good thing to do. So you go over the Parsha every week, and you get to the first Rashi. It happens to be, it's a big turnoff, because everybody starts and gets excited being Mavir Seder in Parshas Bereishis. That's when everybody talks about it, because it's a new cycle. But you have Yontif going on, and it's so busy, and it's so many guests, and so much company, and so much going on, and you're clearing out your sukkah, and it's Simchas Torah. And by the time you get around to it, you're like, you know what, I'm going to sit down and do Parshas Bereishis, I'm going to start anew, I'm really going to be excited about being Mavir Seder every week. And the problem is you get to Parshas Bereishis, and the Rashis are so long and so complicated. To understand the story of Maisa Bereishis is so difficult. The Gemara tells us that Maisa Bereishis is very hard to understand. How do we wrap our heads around God creating a world from nothing? Yesh me'ayin. It's a very hard thing to understand. So you get to the first Parsha and you have a big problem. However, I would venture to say that all of us have the ability to look at the first Rashi on the first Pasuk in the first page of Chumash. So when you get home, I'm giving you a little homework. Look at that Rashi. Rashi says, Bereishis bara Elokim. Okay, even if you don't make it further, look up the first Rashi, Bereishis bara Elokim. Rashi says, Ein hamikra hazeh omer ela darsheni. Rashi begins, right in the beginning of Chumash, he says, Ein hamikra hazeh omer ela darsheni. Rashi says, the first pasuk in Chumash, we don't even know how to read it straight. What does it mean? Bereishis bara Elokim. That sounds like that there was somebody by the name of Bereishis who created God. No, isn't that what it sounds like? Bereishis bara Elokim. It should say Elokim bara Bereishis. It should say that God created the beginning. But instead it says Bereishis bara Elokim. So who is this Bereishis? Interesting. Now don't get the mistaken impression. That's not what it means. But the question is, why was it structured that way? What does the first pasuk in Chumash even mean? And the Be'er Yosef, Rabbi Yosef Salant, writes in a Sefer on Chumash that Rashi did this with intent. Rashi wanted to teach us from the outset that without Torah Shebaal Peh, you don't even understand the first three words of Chumash. It doesn't even make sense. You can't even navigate one pasuk in Chumash without the Torah Shebaal Peh. How will you understand, how will you interpret that pasuk, Bereishis bara Elokim? Who is Bereishis? When did he live? Who created him? And how did he create God? It must be that there's some other interpretation that is needed in order for us to explain and to understand and to appreciate what the Torah means to teach us. And that, writes the Be'er Yosef, is the way that Rashi wants us to have a foundation of all of Chumash that we're going to study. If you don't understand that these two are inextricably bound, that Torah Shebaal Peh and Torah Shebaal Chesav are always together, and without Torah Shebaal Peh, Torah Shebaal Chesav has no understanding and no value at all, that, the Rambam says, is why he included it in HaKofer BaTorah. So what Rabbi Huda HaNasi did by really codifying the Torah Shebaal Peh for us and making the foundational Mishnah, as we know it, as the bedrock of all of Torah Shebaal Peh, was something that really opened up vistas for us of what the Torah Shebichsav is all about. And that really became part and parcel with what the Torah Shebichsav is all about. We go further. All of this was just to introduce us to the author of this Mishnah. So you look at number Beis, and the Mishnah tells us as follows, and we're only going to focus on the first line, Od Chazon Lamoed. My father said, the longer you drag out your teaching of something, it's a school of Arichas Yamim, because the Ribbono Shel Olam is going to want you to finish. So if like you do one line each week, and you do it for the next 100 years, so then you'll have the Siyata D'Shemayah. So we should all be Zuch. We should all have the opportunity to be here for a long time in good health, and to be able to learn and study and grow together. So here we look at a Mishnah, Rebbe Omer. Now that we know who Rebbe actually is, we appreciate a lot more what it is that he said. So the first line that he gives us here in the Mishnah is, Ezohu derech yishara sheyavar lo ha'adam. What is the proper way for a person to live, for a person to choose in life? Kol shehi teferes lo oseha, v'tiferes lo min ha'adam. Something that brings glory to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and something that brings glory to myself. Now, what is that? It's a very cryptic statement. It's very hard to understand what that means. It doesn't really explain. He goes on to the next line in the Mishnah, and he goes on to a totally different topic. So what does this mean, that the way of life is to do something that is glorious for ourselves and brings glory to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? How is one to know what brings glory to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? If I can just ask that...
If Mayor can please mute himself, that would be very helpful. We're hearing a lot of background noise, Reb Mayor.
Thank you. So what does it mean when he says that the perfect way for a person to live life is that they should have a sense of glory, a sense of pride in the way that they go about life? Just to understand and to open up the conversation, we have in the Torah a number of times in Parshas Va'eschanan, I believe it's in this week's Parsha as well, where the Torah writes that we have a prohibition of Bal Tosif and Bal Tigra. Bal Tosif means you're not allowed to add to a mitzvah in the Torah. Bal Tigra means you're not allowed to subtract from a mitzvah in the Torah. So say, for example, it's very nice that we have a mitzvah to take 4 minim on Sukkos. But I decide that that's not good enough. Wouldn't it be nicer if I also added in some roses, if I maybe added in some, I really don't know flowers well enough, but I added in some really nice, exciting things, and it made it much more enhanced. So that seems to be inappropriate. Or let's say I say, you know, the mitzvah of sukkah really speaks to me. It's a beautiful mitzvah. So you know what? Instead of just sitting in the sukkah for the number of days that you're supposed to sit, I'm going to extend it 2 or 3 weeks before, 2 or 3 weeks after. I'll continue on. It's such a beautiful mitzvah. So the Torah says you're not allowed to do that. That's Bal Tosif. You're not allowed to add on to what the Torah has stated. Bal Tigra, and you may argue, well, what's the problem? I'm only trying to serve God better. I'm just doing a little bit more. What's wrong? The mashal my father always gives is, I mean, if you appreciate Washington Heights, you'll appreciate the mashal. If you don't know anything about the Heights, you won't get it. So if you take the A train goes to Washington Heights, right? So you take the A train, you go through the city, and as you're traveling on the A train, there's a sign on the 181st Street station that says Yeshiva University. Right? Anybody ever saw that? Yeshiva University. The next stop is the cloisters. So my father always gives this mashal, and he says, a person wants to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu and he wants to really be closer. So what does he do? So instead of doing what you're supposed to do, you say, no, I'm going to go further toward HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Yeah, but you don't know. Maybe taking the train further is bringing you straight into the cloisters. Right? Instead of getting out at the yeshiva, you're getting out in the cloisters. So there's a big difference. Not always going further means that you are enhancing your relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's not true. You need somebody who has an understanding of what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is all about to tell you that that really makes sense. It could be I think it's right, but it's totally wrong for 1,000,001 reasons that I'm not even aware of. So there's an isser of Bal Tosif, it means you're not allowed to add, and Bal Tigra means you're not allowed to take away from one of the mitzvahs in the Torah. So Bal Tigra, I understand. Bal Tigra makes sense because you would say, if the Torah said do X, you can't do Y. I can't do less. But why is there an issue to add? So the Dubna Magid always gives beautiful mashalim. The Dubna Magid in Parshas Va'eschanan has a apocryphal story where he says that there were two neighbors. One of them happened to be a very wealthy individual. One of them was very simple, very poor. So the simple man really didn't have a lot to his name. And every time he needed something, he went to his neighbor and he said, "Can I borrow this? Can I borrow that?" He said, "Yeah, sure, no problem." So one day he turns to his neighbor. He says, "You know, a lot of my silverware got lost. I would appreciate it if I can borrow a fork for tonight because we just don't have enough and my children are coming home for dinner. It's just not enough." So he says, "Absolutely, of course." He gives him a fork. "When do you plan to give it back?" "I'll bring it back tomorrow morning after we're done. I'll wash it. I'll clean it. I'll bring it back tomorrow morning." Fine. Comes back to the wealthy neighbor the next morning, hands him two forks. So he says, "What's this? I gave you one yesterday. Why are you giving me two?" He says, "Last night an interesting thing happened. The fork became pregnant and had a baby. So it gave birth to another fork, so I'm just giving you back both." Interesting. That's very fascinating. So this wealthy man is so excited. He says, "You know, I'm going to start lending him everything because it seems that wild things happen in his house." So every morning he knocks on his door. He says, "Do you need anything today?" He says, "Yes. Today we need a knife." Comes back the next morning, gives him back two knives. What happened? The knife had a baby, had another knife. Okay, so this is going really nicely, and the neighbor is really excited. One fine day, turns to his neighbor and he says, "We're really having a very fancy gala dinner in my house tonight. I would appreciate if maybe I could just make my house look a little nicer. It's really a very simple house. Can I borrow all of your gold candelabras? You know, you have three of them in the living room. Would you mind if I took them for a day?" He says, "Absolutely, of course you could take them." Now, he was very excited because he says, "It means I'm going to get back six of them." Comes back the next morning, knocks on the door. He says, "Okay, do you have them?" He says, "No, I don't have them." "What do you mean you don't have them? What happened?" He says, "Last night a crazy thing happened. They died." The man starts yelling at him. "They died? What do you mean they died? A candelabra can't die. It's an inanimate object. It's not alive." So he says, "How come when I said they gave birth, you didn't have a question? And all of a sudden when I say they die, you say it can't be?" So writes the Divna Magid, this is what it means, Bal Tosif and Bal Tigra. It's just as foolish to go either way. To say that it's more is the same silliness as saying that it's less. To say that it gave birth is just as silly as saying that it died. So it's an interesting mashal. I always found that to really bring the point out very clearly. But he says that that's really what it means when the Torah says Bal Tosif and Bal Tigra. The Rambam writes in the Mor Nevuchim, why is that true? Why is it that the Torah is not allowed to be augmented, that you're not allowed to add to it, and you're not allowed to take away? The Rambam says, because our understanding when we approach Torah is Hadavar Hashalem B'Tachlis HaEfsharis B'Mino. The Torah is absolute. The Torah is flawless. The Torah is complete. The Torah is perfect. V'lo Yitachein SheYimtzeh Zulaso. You can go around the world and you will not find an alternative to the Torah that is perfect. It is impossible for a human being to make a code of law that is perfect, that is not going to have a hole somewhere, that's not going to have a problem. We know every legal system in the world has a hole in it. It has to. It's impossible that you can have a perfect system that's going to be above any flaw that can ever approach it. It's impossible. And therefore he says that anything else that you're going to find is either going to be behagzama or begira'on. The Rambam says anything else that you're going to find is going to be in some way incomplete. It doesn't mean that everybody's evil. It's not what it means. But he says it means that either something in the Torah is going to be exaggerated in one direction, or begiron, something is going to be taken away in one direction. Because there's no other legal system in the world that is able to be perfect as we know the Torah is. And that's what he says the Torah means when it says that this is a Torah Hashem Tamima. God is perfect, and therefore he gave us a perfect Torah. So that is just the introduction that I think is very important to understand what this Mishnah means. In Avos Terab Nasan, which is a very important set of brises, it's part of Torah Shebal Peh, and it really expands upon a lot of the things that we find in Pirkei Avos. In the Avos Terab Nasan and in the Talmud Yerushalmi, they give a mashal. And they say, it's likened to a person who is traveling on a path, who's going down some kind of royal path. And there are two drachim. There are two sides of the road. One side of the road has raging fires. Right? Look what's going on in Greece. Look what's going on all over the world. I feel like the world is imploding. I know what's happening. So, one side of the road has raging fires. Person knows if I go too close to that side of the road, I'm going to get burnt. I'm going to get scorched. The other side of the road is freezing. Global warming. The other side of the road is snow. And a person knows if I go there, I'm going to get frostbitten. I'm going to be frigid. Not going to be able to survive. What's the answer? The answer is a person understands that they need to stay right in the middle where they are. You need to stay in the center. You need to stay away from the extremism on the side that has the fire. You need to stay away from the extremism that has the intense cold on the other hand. And you need to always remain somewhere in the middle. And what we learn from this is, the Talmud Yerushalmi is teaching us, and the Avestor Rav Nasan, that we need to be very careful. A life of Torah and mitzvos is expected to be a very deliberate life. A life of Torah and mitzvos is meant to be calculated and very meticulous. It doesn't mean we should be rigid with other people. It's not what it means. But it means we need to think. You know, so many times people have asked, my father said, Rav Soloveitchik used to talk about this. Does God really care? We make an announcement. Zman Kriya Shema is at 9:23. Does he care if I say Kriya Shema at 9:24? Really? God is that small? He's that petty? It's going to bother him if I say Kriya Shema 9:24? Zman Tvila, right? You're only allowed to daven Shmona Esrei till a certain time. 12:05, let's say. I don't know. So, I was busy. I was doing things. Really? God is going to mind if I daven Shmona Esrei at 12:45? What do you mean I'm davening? The answer is yes. The answer is yes. We are meant to live a very deliberate and calculated life. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu put into it a lot of detail. My father always says, the Rav Soloveitchik explained it in the following way. He said, look at the human body. Look how detailed that is. I'm not in the medical field, so I don't even appreciate one small ounce of the complexity of the human body. But when you think about it, and you talk to people who do understand, think about somebody who's missing one chromosome. I'm dealing with a couple now. This man has Klinefelter syndrome. I don't know if anybody is familiar with that. He has one extra female chromosome. Right? We can't even see chromosomes. It's something that we can't even see. And look at the effect that it has on a person. I know I didn't say what the effect is. But it's a very problematic condition that this man has. He's married, and it's a problem. No, his marriage is wonderful, but it's causing a problem in a certain area of life. And this is something that, when you think about it, Rav Soloveitchik said, everything HaKadosh Baruch Hu did in the world is precise. Everything is perfect. Well, that's why HaKadosh Baruch Hu set up his code of law to also be very precise. Yes, Man Kriya Shema is 9:23. You have to say Kriya Shema by 9:23. You cannot say it at 9:24. Zman Tefila is 12:05. That means that Shemona Esrei has to be davened by 12:05. If you missed it, because you were busy, okay, you missed it. But yes, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is very meticulous. And there's this tightrope that we walk all the time between something being a great mitzvah or something being a great aveira, the very same act. I'll give you a very practical example that I'm just thinking about. Lashon Hara, we know, is something that is devastating. It's terrible. The Chafetz Chaim writes in a Sefer Shmiras HaLashon, how many Averis you violate when you talk Lashon Hara, 20, some 30, I don't know, whatever it is. He gathers a whole bunch to explain how horrific it is for a person to talk Lashon Hara. Okay. So let's say you have a person who's very careful. You have a person who's very careful and really meticulous, never to say anything negative about another person. Happens to be that they know information about an individual who's dating somebody else. And that person has some serious information that is very relevant to the other party. You are not doing a mitzvah by withholding that information. You're doing an aveira by withholding that information. So it's interesting. The very same words, in one context, can be the greatest aveira. You violate 30 aveiras, 30 yisurim every time you speak a word of Lashon Hara. In another context, that very same piece of information, if it's not shared, would be something that is extremely damaging not to share. And the Chafetz Chaim discusses this. What are the parameters? When am I allowed to share this and when am I not? If I don't share this and then it ends up ruining the marriage or ruining their lives and ruining their children, what service have you done to the Jewish people? So yes, everything is this tightrope. Everything in life is understanding that on the one side we have fire that can totally scorch somebody and burn them. On the other side you can get frostbitten by the snow. And one always needs to find that derech in the middle, which is exactly where HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us all to be. With that in mind, we turn to the authoritative words of the Rambam, where he says in Hilchos Deos the following. Deos harbe yesh lechol echad ve'echad mi b'nei adam. The Rambam says that everybody is different. Zu mishuna mizu ruchoka mimeno biyoser. Everybody is distinct. Our society is very diverse. People don't think the same way. I sometimes talk to people, I wonder, I don't even know how to think this way. Exactly, because the Ribbono Shalom created me with my mind and somebody else with a different mind. And some people are wired differently and some people think differently. It doesn't mean that they're crazy. It doesn't mean that we should attack them. It means they're just different. It's exactly what the Rambam says. The Gemara tells us, Ein partzufeim shavim, the Ribbono Shalom, what's it called, a doppelganger, I think? Right, when there's somebody who looks exactly like you. So there are people in the world that may look similar to us, but there are no two people that are exactly the same. It just doesn't exist. And that's what the Rambam says. And we need to appreciate that. Yesh adam shuhu bal chema koes tamid. Rambam says there are some people who have a tremendous temper, who are very impatient, who have outbursts all the time. On the other hand, yesh adam shadaitim yosheva salav ve'eno koes klal. There are some people who are totally composed, always calm, total equanimity. You know, my mother always tells us, I don't often say Vertlach for my mother, so my mother always tells us that there was a very close friend of theirs when my mother was raising us as children. She said one day she was on the phone with this very close friend and she hears this huge crash in the background of the other side of the line. And she said, what just happened? She said, I don't know, it's kids, you know. So my mother says, maybe you should go check what's going on. So the woman goes into the other room and she says, oh, one of my sons decided to hang from the chandelier and the whole thing came down. So my mother was going ballistic on the phone and this other woman was like, what are you getting worked up about? It's a chandelier. Everyone's fine. It's a big deal. So that's what the Rambam says. You shouldn't go ballistic on the other end of the phone and you shouldn't be so calm when a chandelier and a kid is hanging from the chandelier. Both are not appropriate. But the Rambam says, we've all met people. Some are like this, and too extreme, and are just full of rage, and don't know how to contain themselves. And there are other people who are just too calm, and who don't understand that there are times when you need to insert yourself, or you need to assert yourself. Then the Rambam says, Yesh adam shehu gval le biyoser. There are some people who are so egotistical, and so arrogant, so cavalier. There are some people who are so modest and so humble, they have no self-dignity. Some people who don't realize their own self-value, they have no self-confidence, they can't do anything in life because they have no shred of arrogance at all. You have to believe in yourself to actually be able to accomplish something. There are some people who are just insatiable, gluttonous people, just always eating, always enjoying, always doing things. There are other people who just, they don't even remember to eat. I'm busy, I'm doing something, I'm doing this. What do you mean? You have to take care of yourself. You got to go to the doctor. You have to make sure you're healthy. No, I don't have time, I don't have this, I'm busy. So they're just not paying attention. So you have those people who are just so to the extreme and always enjoying life and always looking after themselves, and other people who never look after themselves. Yesh bal nefesh rechava. There are some people who are greedy and covetous, and there are other people who are just always giving everything away. People can come into my house. You know, Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, who was the father of many of the yeshivas that we have today, he was really the foundation. So Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, I think on his Matseva, it says that doesn't say he was a genius, it doesn't say he was the Rav in Brisk, it doesn't say he was a major Rosh Hashiva in Valazhin. He asked that on his Matseva it should just say Baal Chesed. That's it. Rav Chaim was a Baal Chesed. Now, I know lots of people who are Balei Chasadim. So what does it mean that Reb Chaim was a Baal Chesed? Reb Chaim was Reb Yoshe Ber Soloveitchik's grandfather. So he said that when he was a child, he was afraid to visit his grandfather's house. He went a few times, on a few occasions, to visit his grandfather, Reb Chaim. And he said he was afraid to go to his grandfather's house. Why? Because his door was so open wide, or every homeless from Brisk used to just make themselves comfortable, sleep in Reb Chaim's bed. It was like total hefkeris. I remember, anybody know the Yudins? The only time I had a dugma of such a thing was when I was younger. I remember we used to go to the Yudins for Shabbos every so often. My father and Rabbi Yudin are very close. from Fairlawn, New Jersey. Fairlawn, New Jersey. And I remember that's what I used to feel like. I'm like, who's going to come sleep in the bed next to me tonight? I don't even know. It's like, literally, that's the way their house was. Every homeless, every person who had no place in the community, everybody ended up there, every Shabbos meal, sleeping all over the floors. And they just smile. And they just embraced everyone. So Rav Soloveitchik said, that's what he felt like when he went to his grandfather's house. He was afraid. He was afraid to go, because it was just crazy. There were no limits. It was just chesed to the extreme. So the Rambam says, you have people like this. You have people like that. People who are just so nervous and say, no, what's going to happen if this, if I let this person in, if I do that, then it's going to have implications here and there. So the Rambam goes through all of this. The next paragraph, he tells us that there are some people who, this is really nature versus nurture here. The Rambam says there are some people who are created with certain tendencies. And then the Rambam says that there are others who over time develop certain tendencies. And the Rambam goes into that very interesting psychological discussion that we hear a lot about today. Now you go to the next paragraph where he says, after you hear all of this background and you understand what people are all about, the Rambam says, Shnei kitzavos harachoko zumizu shebechol dea v'dea, ein on derech tova. These are both wrong. To go to the extreme or to be excessive in either direction is wrong, the Rambam says. Ein on derech tova. Ein on derech tova. Now again, if I had to choose, that was not in any way a negative comment against Rabbi and Rebbetzin Yudin. They are tzaddik and gemurim. Everybody who knows them is well aware of who they are and what they're all about. And if I had to be accosted by a Kaddish Baruch Hu la'acharmei v'asim shana, and he would say, why were you so nice? It's okay. I'll deal with that punishment. So he'll have nothing to answer for. He's okay. But the Rambam says the truth is, when you're figuring out the right way to live life, it's not good to live on the extreme, in either direction. Ein roi lo la'adam lalechas bahem v'lo lalamdan la'atzmo. This is not the ideal way of life. To live like that is not normal, the Rambam says. It's not good to be excessive in either direction. It's not good to be too calm. It's not good to be too worked up. It's not good to be overspending on things. It's not good to be so stingy. Nothing's good when it's to the extreme. Look what's going on in the world. Extremism is destroying our world in so many different ways. Nobody knows how to be living life with moderation anymore. It's you're either all in this way or all in the other way. Why does it have to be that way? Maybe life is nuanced and I'm allowed to have an opinion about this and feel differently about something else. No, everybody has to be polarized into the extreme, and the Rambam says it's wrong. Look at the next paragraph. Haderech, the other side. Haderech hayishara. What is the right way of life? And this is the Rambam's interpretation of our Mishnah. Rebbe says, Ezu derech yishara sheyavar lo ha'adam. What is the right way, the correct path for a person to be living life? The Rambam says, Haderech hayishara himida beinonish shebechal dea v'dea. To be tempered, for a person to be poised, for a person to be moderate and nuanced in everything they do. Mikol deya sheyesh la'adam v'hi hadeya shehi rachoka mishnei haktzavos richok shaveh. That is the person who finds the balance between the one extreme, which is fire, the other extreme, which is the snow, where you're going to get frostbitten or you're going to get burnt, and a person who learns how to walk that tightrope of life and knows and understands to walk, like he says in the last line here, kol adam shadeosav kulan deos beinonis mumutzaos. Somebody who figures out how to strike that balance is called a chacham. That, the Rambam says, is the proper way of life. And that's what Rebbe teaches us here. The Rambam has an amazing comment. You know, you would say, somebody is such a charitable person, they give away so much, it's so wonderful, it's great, it's beautiful. Look what the Rambam says here. They say about certain tzaddikim that, you know, they used to give away everything they had, they were, you know, didn't have a penny left for themselves, didn't have anything to buy dinner for themselves, for their families. The Rambam says, La'olam lo yakdish adam v'lo yachrim kol nechasav. You're not allowed to do that, the Rambam says. He quotes a pasuk in Chumash. You're not allowed to give away all of your assets. You're not allowed to just be this overly generous, magnanimous person that wants to give everything away. It's not right. It's not the right way to live life. And the Rambam writes, Ein zu chasidus eloshtus. Don't think you're being so righteous. It's absurdity, he says. It's senseless. It makes no sense for a person to live life that way. to just give everything away and keep nothing for yourself? There's a reason why HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave it to you. He wants you to live life. He also wants you to give charity. He also wants you to be generous to other people. But the Ribono Shel Olam wants you to live. Hareyu ma'abid kamamono v'yitzdarach l'briros. The Rambam says, you're going to give everything away, then you're going to go around asking for handouts. V'ein merachamim alav. We should not have mercy on you, because you did it to yourself. The Ribono Shel Olam set you up for success. He wants you to be happy. He wants you to live life in a certain way. And you choose to turn away from it. I'm doing it because I want to be nice to other people. It doesn't matter. But it has to be in moderation. Of course you should be nice to other people. But it has to make sense. And this is something that he talks about, again, in the next paragraph. You can read it on your own in Hilchos Deos, where the Rambam says that a person who goes to the extreme is never going to have a healthy way of life. My father talks about this so often. And this is not a condemnation. Don't take my words out of exactly what I'm saying. It's not a condemnation of anyone. He says it in both extremes. So he says there are certain communities where they stress learning, learning, learning. You're only allowed to learn. You're never allowed to do anything else, right? And that's a tremendous value. And there is tremendous value to learning. And we all agree that we need Talmud Torah to hold up the world. And that we need Talmud Chacham in the world. But my father's point, the way he always says it is, it can't be to the extreme. So what does it mean to the extreme? If you say that the only thing in life is learning, and that is the only ideal that we need to think about, and everything else is irrelevant, so then that means, and this is an overgeneralization, and it's not true about full communities, it's not what I'm saying. There are individuals who have these problems, and this is all my father meant to say, that there are people who say, well, I need to learn, I can't afford it, so I'm going to cheat on my income taxes, and I'm going to cut corners here, and I'm going to lie about this, not because they're evil people. It's because everything has to fit into the ideal that I'm trying to get to, into the end that I'm trying to fit into. But that's only because you took learning to the extreme. There are 613 mitzvahs. One of the mitzvahs also is lo signov. So because you went to the extreme in one way, you then have sacrificed something else in another direction. And he always says it in the other direction. There are some people who say, you have to work and you have to support your family and you have to do everything to provide for them, not just for your children, for your grandchildren and great-grandchildren. Who knows what's going to come up? And because of that, they don't daven with a minyan and they don't always put on tefillin in the morning. And sometimes when they have a business meeting on a Shabbos, well, what am I supposed to do? I can't miss out. What am I going to do? How are my children going to live? So, again, people go to the extreme in both directions. Neither of them are proper. Neither of them are correct. It's just one example. One example of so many, but that's what the Rambam writes here. The Gemara talks about people who over-exaggerate, people who amplify, people who magnify too much one aspect of life over another. So the Gemara says that there's such a thing as a chassid shote, right? Doesn't mean a silly Hasidic Jew. It means a person who thinks that they are doing a midas chassidah, somebody who thinks, I'm so pious. But the truth is, objectively, when you look at them, you say, that is ridiculous. So the example the Gemara gives is, imagine, he says, Hechi dami chassid shote. This is actually a Gemara Masechas Sota, I didn't put it on here. So the Gemara says an amazing story. What does it mean to be a chassid shote? What does it mean to be a foolish, pious individual? So the Gemara says, Kagon te katava itza benara. A woman is going swimming. And there's somebody who passes by and hears that there's somebody, people are screaming, there's a person stuck in the bottom of the pool, we need a lifeguard. Now, I happen to be a lifeguard. I know how to swim, and I know how to help people. And I'm passing by, and I hear the commotion. I say, oh, absolutely, I'm a lifeguard. Of course I'll go. And he says, he looks at the situation. He says, oh, I'm sorry. No, I am a lifeguard, and I do know how to do CPR, and I do know how to save people, but this woman is in a bathing suit. Like, what am I supposed to do? I can't really jump in there, you know? So the Gemara, this is not my example. The Gemara says, Va'amar, and he says, Lav orech ara listakulaba. I'm very careful. I don't look at women that are dressed this way. So I would love to save her. And really, any other time you would call on me, I would do anything for this person. I love people. But right now, unfortunately, she's just not dressed appropriately, so I can't help. The Gemara says such a person is what we refer to as a chassid shote. That's not pious. That's insanity. The Gemara gives another example. There's a young child who falls into a pool, and the child is gasping for air, and somebody needs to jump in. And this guy is just finishing up davening, so he's still wearing his tefillin. He says, give me a minute, let me just take my tefillin off, and I'll be right over. Take your tefillin off? You're worried about your tefillin getting ruined when you jump into the river? When there's somebody whose life is on the line? That's not a midos chasidus. That is somebody who doesn't have their priorities straight. It's somebody who's overemphasizing tefillin and de-emphasizing life. That's somebody who's overemphasizing shmiras einayim, who's overemphasizing his issue with men and women mingling, which obviously is something that we need to be careful about, but you can't overemphasize it to the point that the woman should lose her life. That's crazy. That's insanity, the Gemara says. That's a chasid shote. So the Gemara has such a painful story in Maseches Yuma, and this is really what came to mind yesterday when I was preparing this. The Gemara tells a story that there was an avoda in the Beis HaMikdash referred to as Trumas HaDeshen. Every morning, the first thing that had to be done was they had to clean off the Mizbeach. Now, it's strange. In essence, you were asked to be the garbage man, right? There was a whole pile of dirt on top of the Mizbeach from the ashes of everything that was burnt from the day before. And before we start a new day, we have to clean off what happened yesterday. So I wouldn't say that's the most glorifying job. It's not the most glorious thing for a person to do. But okay, somebody has to do it. So they made it into a thing. You know, it's like amazing how you just make a thing out of it. So that's in the days of the Gemara also. They made a thing that they said, whoever's going to be the first one up on the Mizbeach, he's going to have the choice, he's going to have the opportunity to do the Trumas HaDeshen. Okay, so you made it exciting, you give out tickets and raffles, and all of a sudden, all the Kohanim are fighting, everybody wants to take out the garbage. Why? I don't know. That became the thing. So the Gemara says that every day, every Kohen would try to wake up 5 minutes earlier than the one next to him, and he would try to run up to the Mizbeach as quickly as he can, and he would say, oh, I'm here first, I get to do the Trumas HaDeshen. Okay, so that was beautiful, wonderful, everybody's rushing, everybody's excited. Until one fine day, the Gemara says, there are two Kohanim running up the Mizbeach together, and there they are going up the ramp, and one looks over at the other and he sees, oh, this guy looks like he's almost at the finish line, I'm going to lose my chance. So he takes a knife out of his pocket, he stabs the Kohen next to him. Yeah, it's the story in the Gemara. He stabs the Kohen next to him on the Mizbeach. He stabs him. And the Kohen is taking his last breaths, because he was just stabbed. While his friend is running up and saying, aha, I made it. As long as he didn't get there first, I made it. If that wasn't bad enough, the Gemara says, there was an outcry in the Beis HaMikdash area. Look what happened, you're murdering your friend because you wanted to get up first. Are you out of your mind? Then the Gemara says, if that wasn't bad enough, the Gemara says that the one who was killed, his father was there that day. His father was also a Kohen. And he sees what's going on, and he quickly runs over to his son, and he sees that his son is still alive, still a few breaths there. And he says, quickly, take the knife out, because the knife belongs to the Beis HaMikdash, we don't want it to become Tameh. If we're going to wait along until my son dies, the knife is going to become Tameh, and he starts screaming, make sure you take the knife out of my son, and bring it away so that it won't become Tameh. That's the story the Gemara says. And the Gemara says, what's the bigger tragedy? The Gemara tells us, when people are extremists, they lose focus, they lose balance, they have no understanding of anything. So over here, this father got so carried away with the Kedusha of the Beis HaMikdash, and of course we all agree the Beis HaMikdash is very important. And of course we all agree that you should not defile or be metameh anything that belongs to the Beis HaMikdash. Of course that's true. But now that's what you're worried about? That's where your focus is right now? Your son is taking his last breaths. He was just stabbed on the Mizbeach. He's about to die. And that's what you're worried about? So the Gemara tells us these kinds of stories. That people who exaggerate in many different areas of life, people who put too much focus on one aspect of life over another, end up making a total distortion of what Torah is all about. I'll close with this one final comment, and that is, when we offer karbanos, the Torah says, there are many, many different rules and regulations of how you offer a karban, which part of the Beis HaMikdash you go to offer this karban, the north, the south, this mizbeach, that mizbeach, inside, outside, where you have to eat it, how long you're allowed to eat it. But one of the very strange halachos that we're told is, Kol sa'or v'chol dvash lo saktiru mimenu isha l'Hashem. Whenever you offer a karban, you're not allowed to have sa'or u'dvash. Now, dvash is honey. Sa'or means leaven. So you're not allowed to have yeast, and you're not allowed to have honey on any of the karbanos. Why? What's this insistence? On the other hand, the Torah says you always have to have salt. So that's a shear into itself. Why do we have to have salt and you're not allowed to have these? So the Rambam already tries to explain what's the problem with having honey and yeast. So the Rambam says the answer is very simple, because the Ovdei Avodah Zarah in the times of the Chumash used to offer sacrifices, and on every sacrifice they would put honey because they wanted it to taste better. So he says, we want to distance ourselves so much from the pagan community, so therefore we decide that we're not allowed, the Torah says, we're not allowed to have any se'or, any devash, because that is too reminiscent of the terrible practices of the Ovdei Avodah Zarah. Okay, so the Rambam says, very pragmatic, very practical. Other Rishonim give other reasons, but I once saw Al Derech HaDrash, maybe the reason is, this is not a tzivui, this is not a mitzvah that is given solely to our focus on karbanos. This is something that is relevant to all of Avodas Hashem, and that is, yeast is very sour, very bitter. And devash is overly sweet. You eat too much honey, you're not going to feel well. You have too much sour yeast, it's also not going to taste good. Kol sa'or v'chol dvash lo saktiru mimenu isha l'Hashem. When we want to approach the service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we cannot be extremists in either direction. I find it a turnoff when you have people who are seemingly always bitter. I understand you want to be a Yarei Shamayim. I understand you want to be scrupulous about certain things. But you come to my house, I'm a frum person, and you start cross-examining me, where'd you buy this, and how'd you do that, and how'd you cook this, and what kind of pot, and what... Really? Is that what the Ribbono Shel Olam wanted from frum Jews? Is that really what he wants? I'm not saying we shouldn't emphasize kashrus. But is that really what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants? You should always be sour and make everybody else feel sour? Is that really what he wants from you? Hard for me to imagine. And in the other direction, the Torah says, Kol sa'or v'chol dvash lo saktiru. You can't be overly accepting either. There are some people out there who say, no, everyone's wonderful, everything's great, nobody can do any wrong, everything's just perfect, and we live in a society where we have to be all accepting, and we have to just take people for who they are, and we can't judge them, and we can never tell our children that this is right or this is wrong, because everybody needs to have choices, everything's just so sweet and so wonderful. It's also wrong. What the Torah teaches us is that there's an expectation that we do everything in moderation. We have to be careful with how we make decisions throughout our lives. And that means we cannot be that person who is always the sa'or, who is always dvash and critical, and always questioning and always judging. And on the other hand, you cannot be the person who's just always dvash. Everything's so sweet and everything's accepted and everything's fine, and there's no room to ever have a discussion about anything that we ever see or experience in our lives. And that really is the way the Rambam interprets what this Mishnah is all about. Ezu derech yishera sheyavar lo ha'adam. What is the derech hayasher? What is the perfect medium? What is the perfect way, the perfect venue in which a person is supposed to experience life? Kol shehi tif'eres lo seha v'tif'eres lo min ha'adam. The Rambam says it's supposed to be pleasant, not only for me, but for other people around me. I shouldn't be bitter. I shouldn't be overly this, overly that. I should just find what the Rambam says is the shvil hazav, the derech hamamutze, the path in the middle, that is the path of moderation, that is the path of deliberation, of a person who knows how to think carefully, who knows how to be nuanced, the person who understands how to balance different factors and never to overemphasize this over that, and to always put things in the right perspective. Don't overemphasize Beis HaMikdash and underemphasize Shvichas Damim, human life. Don't overemphasize your Shmiras Einayim and de-emphasize the fact that somebody needs help right now. Everything has to be with a calculation. Everything has to be carefully thought out. There's not always going to be a monolithic way, not always a monolithic answer. We live a nuanced religion because HaKadosh Baruch Hu created a nuanced world. And we are all very nuanced people. The Ribbono Shel Olam made our world very precise and very decisive. And that's the same way that he wants us to live as well. And that's why the Sefer HaChinuch, when he talks about the mitzvah of V'halach, I know I said 10 minutes ago, it's the last thing I'm saying, when he says V'halachta B'drachav, and he defines, what is that mitzvah of going in the ways of HaKadosh Baruch Hu? The Sefer HaChinuch writes, The ikar of going in the way of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is to live a life of moderation. That's what it means, v'halachta bedrachav. And with all the extremism that we see going around today, it's just an opportunity to remind ourselves of this critical and beautiful lesson of Rabbeinu HaKadosh and Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, that life can be lived this way. Life can be glorious not only for ourselves, but for HaKadosh Baruch Hu and for all those around us as well. So